Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The pattern repeats itself so often there's a shorthand for it, school-to-prison pipeline. Kid acts out in school, disruptive, maybe threatening, or dangerous. Kid is suspended, maybe expelled. If criminal charges are pressed, it can trigger a downward spiral that derails a young person's future. Everyman Theater's current production, called simply Pipeline, takes the audience deep into one family's fear for their son, Omari, played by Dylan J. Fleming. To protect him from inner-city threats, they have sent Omari to an exclusive boarding school, but now he's exploded at one of his teachers, physically pushing him, and Omari's mother, played by Alicia Gamble, demands an explanation.
He kept questioning me in class.
Questioning you how?
I didn't feel like being bothered. I said that to him. Ma told him I wasn't in the mood for being questioned.
Omari, he's your teacher. He has the right to...
Nah, he don't. Not how he was doing it. He'd been doing it a lot, and I was sick of it. We get to discussing the reading. Native son, Richard Wright, and he started asking questions. What made Bigger Thomas kill that woman? What were his social limitations? What made the animal in him explode? And who he looking at when he asking all these questions, Ma? Who he looking at?
Omari.
Like I'm the spokesperson. Like I'm Bigger Thomas. Like I'm predisposed or some shit to know what it's like to be an animal.
Omari, watch your mouth.
You hear me, though? You hear what he doing? He started picking me out, asking me to answer. What did I discover when reading the text?
Omari, he's your teacher. He has the right to ask you about the text.
Nah, he don't. He ain't just questioning me about Native son. He ain't just talking text. He's saying something else, something beneath the question. And it's like, I'm the only one who can hear it.
That doesn't give you the right to lose your cool, Omari. That doesn't give you the right to be the animal.
But it's all he's seeing. He won't leave me alone. I said, mister, don't pick on me today. I ain't got nothing to offer. But he won't leave me alone.
A teacher is supposed to engage you, even when you don't feel like it.
The questions the play raises will be the focus of a panel discussion Saturday organized by Promise Heights, an array of projects to reinforce families in West Baltimore. Later in the show, we'll talk to the principal of Renaissance Academy. Now we're joined by two people involved in the Everyman production. Jefferson A. Russell is a veteran actor, as well as a former Baltimore City policeman and former probation officer. Welcome to On the Record.
Hi, Sheila. How are you? Glad to be here.
And Brianna McCoy is Everyman's Director of Education and Community Engagement. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks so much for having me.
Jefferson, what was your reaction to this script, to reading for this role?
When I was presented with the possibility of being a part of the production, I was very excited because this the play itself kind of comes at me. It's a few different intersections. One, you mentioned having been a police officer and state juvenile probation officer, but also I attended a private school here in Baltimore. I went to Gilman for a few years and know what that's like to be one of very few, if not the only, Black student in a sea of other students. So I related to both the adults in the play, but also very directly to Omari. So I was very excited to be a part of this this play, and it speaks very directly to so many things that are going on in our country right now.
Tell me more about that experience of being one of the few Black students in a white school.
I know in recent years there has been, you know, the word reckoning has been used when it comes to social justice and matters of race in our country. And I know, I think within the past couple of years, there was a Facebook group of former students of color at various private schools in Baltimore City that ended up making the news about their own personal experiences having been students at these schools and the sort of the racial overtones of certain circumstances and incidents that made the news. So I definitely related to that. And that happened to me a few times when I was at Gilman. Amari, connecting it to our play, Amari, that environment that he finds himself in, if not addressed, and you know, the reality of what that student is going through and what he's feeling, if it's not addressed, it'll be reckoned with at some point, for sure. And that's part of the feeling when I was a student at Gilman.
Brianna, there are only six or seven characters in this play, and they all show us an aspect of the pressures of the situation. I know you're not the director, but tell us a little bit about the process of this production.
Our department gets really excited about plays that offer multiple points of view on a particular topic, and it's our job to discover the Baltimore in every story. And I can't think of a more relevant or resonant story than Pipeline. The process of bringing this play to life and doing it in a unique world with the pandemic that we find ourselves in, filming this production so it is streamable, allows us access to the myriad of points of view, from parent to teacher to student to administrator. And we're looking forward to mining each of those perspectives in our community engagement programming throughout.
This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Brianna McCoy, Director of Education and Community Engagement for Everyman Theater, and with actor Jefferson Russell, who plays Xavier, Omari's father. He's a former Baltimore police officer and a founding member of Galvanize, a network for artists of color. Jefferson, tell us a bit about Xavier.
Xavier is a marketing executive. He does pretty well financially. And I think on the surface, he is a little distant emotionally. And I think that comes through in his connections, his relationship with both Naya and Omari. He is not quite giving as much as is needed to both Naya and Omari. He thinks he is, and I dare say he's doing the best that he can.
Yeah, let me interrupt. I want listeners to hear a bit of that. Xavier is Naya's ex-husband. Omari directs a lot of anger and frustration at you as Xavier, and you give him your view.
Took good care of you. I never missed a payment, never missed a first day of school or a birthday. You never went hungry. Always had a shirt on your back, money in your pocket. Didn't I do that? Is that my sin?
Jefferson, I'm asking you as someone inhabiting this role, but also as a former player in the criminal justice system, does Xavier not get enough credit for what he does here?
Well, yeah, that's interesting. Credit for doing what oftentimes, you know, we as humans, we seek applause or commendations for doing what is necessary, what we're supposed to be doing. He's doing what he needs to be doing anyway. So I don't know that he necessarily is seeking any sort of satisfaction as far as applause in that sense, but just some recognition from his son. He's really seeking a connection, and he doesn't know how to go about that. So he's taking care of all the needs as far as survival needs, you know, physical survival needs, food, water, clothes, shelter, all of these things. But clearly the son is seeking something else that in this moment, Xavier, he doesn't know how to connect with his son in that way. And I think that is a very, very real situation. I think we see that very much so in this particular scene.
Brianna, we're not out of the pandemic yet. How does that affect how you can get ideas from this play into the community?
Well, there's so much out of our control. We have to focus on what we can bring forward and look at the opportunities, those silver lining moments that may present themselves. And I think we are able to do that with this play, with the story of Pipeline, by working in partnership with community organizations. And we have a longstanding partnership with the University of Maryland Baltimore School of Social Work, which has really been wonderful to tap into the insight that the social work faculty and administrators bring forward in reflection of two plays a season at Everyman. And despite going virtual, we are actually looking at ways we can connect to folks in new ways. So we have an essential conversation coming up on June 19th from 1 p.m. to 2:30 that will center on the questions that this play brings forward. And we will hear from Promise Heights executive director, principal of Renaissance Academy, student perspectives, as well as the wonderful artists and resident company members that help bring this story forward, like Jefferson Russell. So to sort of hear the confluence of voices reflecting on the imagined narrative, but making it real because they're going to place it right now today in the schools, is a powerful moment where we see art and life intersect. And it's just one example of the opportunities that this time has held for us.
Jefferson Russell, what do you hope the audience takes from this play, Pipeline?
I think the play provides an up-close and very personal story about the notion and the concept of pipeline. It humanizes it. And Omari is one who, and also I dare say all of the characters, but specifically Omari, is seeking to have his voice heard, and he's seeking to be seen and making sure that he's exclaiming in his way that he matters. So it personalizes, it humanizes the concept of the pipeline from our schools to jails. That is a very real issue with our cities, with our Black men, young Black men in particular, but not just Black men, you know, Black and brown people. So I think that's what it does at its best. It gives an up-close, personal, human story to this.
I'm grateful to you both for talking to me about it. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila, for the opportunity.
In Everyman Theater's production of Pipeline, running through July 11th, veteran actor Jefferson A. Russell plays Xavier, father of the young man at risk. Brianna McCoy is Everyman's Director of Education and Community Engagement. Quick break now on the record, then we'll meet the principal of Renaissance Academy, who deals each day with pipeline risks. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking this morning about the school-to-prison pipeline, the pattern in which pupils acting disrespectfully or violently can escalate into criminal charges and a downward spiral. Everyman Theater's play, Pipeline, streaming through July 11th, is sparking a community conversation on Saturday about school discipline. It's organized by Promise Heights, which runs several projects in West Baltimore to support families there. An important voice in that conversation will be that of Tamitha Woodhouse, principal of Renaissance Academy. She's been an educator for 23 years. She was principal of Excel Academy Middle and High School, and she joins us now by Zoom. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Hello, everyone.
How has your thinking about discipline evolved during your years running schools and nonprofits? Where did you start?
I don't know when the light bulb went off, but I can say my years at Excel Academy really got me to do a lot of self-reflecting as it related to how I was handling discipline. So this was an alternative middle school, 6 to 12, and many of the kids came with academic and behavior issues. And how do I change the way we respond to some of these acute behavior issues was really, really important. And we had to come up with creative ways and strategies to best serve these students and to ensure that we were not doing more harm than good in our practices at the school level.
There was a particular incident when a female student assaulted you. Tell me about that.
So I was punched in the face by a female student, and initially I was so emotionally upset and distraught that, hey, you know, I've gotten assaulted. Not only do I want her suspended, I want to press charges. I feel like, you know, this is what we should be doing. I was all in my emotions, and we went forward. She was suspended. I pressed charges, and then we went to court. And I can remember walking into this dark, gloomy juvenile courtroom. And it was at that moment, sitting there, and she said, "You guys don't even know me. You don't even know me." That rang the bell to make me just jump up and say, "I can't do this. I'm not going forward." And it was at that moment, I think, that I realized that she was right. One, we did not know her. We did not take the opportunity or the time to find out why she was so angry and why she felt like this behavior was going to get her the results to resolve whatever was going on with her. And it was that case that I think really changed how I began to look at what happens with children, you know, because for me to continue to press charges, it would have been double jeopardy. She was already suspended from school. I wasn't hurt physically in that assault. I think my feelings was hurt. I was angry about it. And I had to really own my feelings around that and ask myself, why was I doing this? And it didn't feel good. And so I immediately stopped the process and left the court and have not been back in a court for a student to this day.
So that particular case stopped, but beyond her case, what changed?
Just going back into the schoolhouse and really taking my reflection to my team and saying, hey, guys, what can we do different? How do we begin to look at this differently? And then really putting in systems and structures that allow children to grow. And before they even begin to exhibit these acute behaviors, how do we talk to them first, right? So when a kid is angry and upset, you know, I had a couple of techniques. One was, okay, first of all, I need you to breathe. Secondly, it would be, who hurt you? Why are you hurting? And that would normally bring down their defense. It would be me and them in a private room, and they would normally come down enough for us to now hold a conversation so that we could get beyond that. And at that point, we would have an entryway for the staff person that they were upset with to come into the conversation. And we would process that. The student would be heard, the staff would be heard, and everyone would have to own their part that they played in that. And they would go back into the school community, and they would have a positive relationship, and it built positive relationships between student and staff. And it built a trusting learning community, because kids knew that their voices was going to be heard and that they were going to be able to express themselves. And there was some pushback. You know, there was staff who didn't understand why I wasn't suspended if they felt it was a suspendable offense. And I would have to sit down with them and say, hey, look at this. This is what, you know, our code of conduct say we can do, but was it to this level, right? Are we really more in our emotions about what happened, or are we really trying to help the kid? And getting staff to realize that sometimes our emotions, you know, we just want to act and do something, and that's not always in the best interest of children. No, and so that's how we begin to really change the mindset of our staff.
The girl who hit you in the face, what grade was she? How old was she?
9th grade.
If she had been found culpable in a legal process, what kind of impact would that have had on her?
In my mind, because I don't know the process of once that happens, but in my mind, I really felt like her life would have took a downward spiral. I believe that I would have been the person who was responsible for a young person who's never had a criminal record to get a criminal record and to now be feeling like she's walking with this shadow over her. And that's not something that I would have felt really good about. So it was something that I chose not to do. I didn't feel that ruining, for me, it would have been ruining her life, was worth it.
That's Tamitha Woodhouse, principal of Renaissance Academy and mother of 3 sons. Here on The Record on WYPR, I'm Sheila Castro. We're talking about her approach to discipline in school and how it's evolved. I want to get back to your staff. I understand all sides are heard, but I presume that some teachers or other staff members feel you're listening harder to the kids, that their view of what took place and what should take place next isn't being heard.
And that is true. I have had those conversations with staff. Where they did feel like, oh, well, you're just listening to students. But I can say that my staff members who I've worked with over the years realize that they were heard. It may not have been the protocol or the action that I'd taken, may not have been what they wanted, but they do know that they were heard. And I have to always differentiate through because I heard you doesn't necessarily mean I agreed with you and I was going to do what you wanted me to do. Sometimes their consequences were lighter than mine because we all agree that the kids must have a consequence. You know, there is rewards and consequences in everything we do. And so we agreed on that. It was the level of the consequence that often I would have some discourse with staff about.
Do kids ever try to spin you?
Oh, definitely. That is always the case. And that's why we have to bring all parties to the table, right? Because they tell their side, the staff tell their side, and then there's what really happened because everybody's perception. And I tell them, your perception is valid, but I still need to get to the truth. And sometimes we'll find out that the kid was spinning me. And once we get to that, and I'll say to the kid, as long as you don't lie to me, I'll go to the moon with you. But once you start to lie, it's over. And a lot of the kids begin to respect that because they knew that as long as they didn't lie, they were supported.
I mentioned that you are the mother of 3 sons. How much does that experience influence how you approach discipline in the schools?
It does. It really, because all 3 of them are different. So those 3 different kids told me that I needed 3 different ways of dealing with them. And I carry that on to my job. Each kid has their own story. Each kid have their own needs. And I have to deal with them all individually and not one size fit all. And I would say that my oldest son, he brings, even now today, he brings, I can go to him and hold conversations, say, oh, I have a group of kids. And he'll say, Mom, you can't do that this time and day. You got, you know, and he gives me suggestions about how to work with the young Black male because he says, Mom, you don't know what it feels like to be on the streets of Baltimore as a young Black male. You know, we're constantly harassed. And so he tells me what happens and what my young pupils are going through, which gives me some insight on sometimes how to be a little bit more creative, how to be a little bit more sensitive and have some empathy, not necessarily sympathy for the position that they're in and really working with my staff to shift our thinking.
I really am grateful to you for talking to us about this. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Tamitha Woodhouse is principal of Renaissance Academy. She's been an educator for 23 years and is the mother of three sons. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, we have information about the Promise Heights discussion on Saturday afternoon. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks!